Yeti is Nick and Jack here from our T-Boy studio.
We wanted to whip up something special for you today.
Yeah.
Our live interview with a surprised guest from our New York City live show.
All right, so Jack and I, we sat down with Mark Lori, the legendary serial entrepreneur, for a 30-minute talk on stage at the live show.
We thought the conversation was so valuable,
it was great.
So much fun, so interesting, we had to share it with the whole audience on this pod feed.
So we cut up that interview from the live show this week and turned it into today's podcast.
So enjoy today's interview pod. It's the best one we've ever done.
Oh, it's a total T-Boy.
And on Monday, we'll be back with our regular programming,
which will also be a T-Boy.
15 years before this song, two boys from the Northeast met in the dorm. They had an idea to cause a cultural storm. It's the best one yet, but the best is the norm. Jack, Nick, that's it. I don't even think they need to practice. 50%, that's a fat tip. T-Boy City on your at list. If you know, you know, cause we ready to go. We can't wait no more, so just start the show. Start the show. Start the show.
First, a quick word from our sponsor.
This podcast is supported by FedEx.
FedEx offers picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday.
See the FedEx service guide for delivery information.
FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business.
Absolutely. Positively, FedEx. Today's show is sponsored by Acura.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura.
And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet.
Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own.
Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Today's special guest is the ultimate New York entrepreneur, in our opinion.
This man is the most energetic serial founder we've ever met or heard of.
He was born on Staten Island, raised in New Jersey, and yeah, he drank the New York tap water.
Yeah, he did. If you have started a business or want to start a business, this interview is for you because this man has founded, give or take, a baker's dozen businesses.
Yeah. Okay, he founded a baseball card company years ago that he sold to Tops, like, right after college.
He founded diapers.com and sold it to Amazon for $500 million.
And get this, after that, he left Amazon, started a rival to Amazon, jet.com, and then sold that to another rival of Amazon for $3 billion.
And he can't pass. This man is not a conventional billionaire. No. He's not just buying a sports team and retiring.
Although he does own the Minnesota Timberwolves.
True. He is still quite hungry, though, literally.
Yeah. Jack and I like to describe his company, his new venture, as if DoorDash and Domino's and Eataly had a baby, and then that baby was raised by Bobby Flay.
That company is Wonder, and it exists thanks to the entrepreneurship of Mark Lori.
Yetis. He is the Earl of e-commerce.
He is the leader of launching.
And there is a high chance he ends this interview early because he has another business idea he wants to get a head start on. So we got to get to this.
We won't take offense if that happens.
Yetis, today's guest is Mark Lori, the legendary risk-tolerant entrepreneur.
The most risk-tolerant person we've ever met.
The ultimate serial entrepreneur. Let's give it up for Mark Lori of Wonder. Mark, we wanted to talk to you. We thought, okay, what is like one story that we could just kick things off with that says everything about Mark? And out of all the stories you have, the one story we thought is bobsledding.
Yeah, forget about all those businesses we mentioned launching.
Yeah.
Mark qualified for the 1998 Winter Olympics in bobsledding for Team USA.
And you were working on Wall Street at the time when you qualified. Can you tell us about this story? Because we think it kind of sets the tone and says everything about
it. We understand you literally stumbled into the opportunity.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of just a crazy story. So the U.S. national bobsled team was doing, just building momentum for the sport. They were going to cities around the country, and they laid a bobsled track down at the World Financial Center. And they basically had people push the sled they would sort of time you, and they basically said, we're going to be here for a week, and the fastest time gets invited to training camp in Lake Placid.
Was it the winter time? Was there ice?
No. They just laid a track in a sled, and you just pushed it down the track.
That's a lot of friction.
On flat, you know? And I'd done track in college and stuff, so I was like, well, I'll give it a try. It was lunchtime. I took my jacket off, you know, went up there, pushed the sled. I didn't think anything of it. Yeah. The guy seemed impressed with the time, and then that was that. And then a few weeks later, I get this call. I thought it was a joke, you know. Somebody's like, hey, this is so-and-so from the U.S. National Bobsled Team.
Classic.
Did you push a sled down at World Financial Center a few weeks ago? I said, yeah, I did. And they said, well, you had the fastest time, so we're inviting you up to the training center at Lake Placid, where they'll put you through a battery of tests. And if you pass the test, you'll make a team that basically trains together. And then there's a competition to see who makes the team, basically. That's what they said. Yeah. And so I said, okay, sure. I went up to Lake Placid. I did this battery of tests. They had you jump, sprint, lift weights, high jump, long jump, sprint, all this stuff. And they score you. And if you get a certain score, then you can train with the team before the competition. And so I passed this test. And then they said, well, now you're going to train for a month, all day, every day.
And you're working in finance.
I'm working at a bank. Yeah, I'm working at a bank. So I'm up there, and they say, you know, you're going to train for a month, and then we're going to have the time trials. And so I said, okay, well, hold on a second. I need to call my boss at the bank. So I called my boss and I said, you're not going to believe this, but I'm up at Lake Placid and I need to take a month off.
Yeah. It's cool running's three.
He said, what are you going to do? And I said, I'm going to learn how to push the bobsled. So I did that for a month. I got the month. And then at the end of the month, there was the time trials. And basically top 13 make it. And then I had to decide whether I was going to train for the next 2 years to go to the Olympics or...
How many years?
Go back. It would be 2 years. This was 96. The Olympics were 98.
So you didn't end up going to the Olympics. But the funny thing we noticed when we were chatting with you is you also went to business school at Columbia, but then you dropped out of that. Yeah. And then you went to Wharton. Well, you dropped out of that too.
So we noticed you kind of dropped out of the Olympic team in a way. and two Ivy League business schools. It's just a really funny pattern. And you know, it seems like when there's an urgent opportunity to build something, you have to go do it.
Yeah, that's basically what happens. Yeah.
And we actually think that goes way back to your childhood. You said that from, you know, the age of childhood, you wanted to make money. Can you tell us, how did that feel when you were a kid?
So I grew up in Staten Island, as you said. You know, the first person in my family ever go to college. My parents had me when they were 20 years old. You know, no money. Left me at my grandparents. So my grandparents raised me quite a bit of the time. And came home from school one day with my grandmother, and there was a crayon. I was 4 years old, and it said, what do you want to be when you grow up? And the teacher kind of wrote it, and it said farmer. And I grew all these vegetables and things, you know, and I gave it to my grandmother, and she goes, you want to be a farmer? Why do you want to be a farmer?
Does Staten Island have farmers?
I never saw a farm at that point, but somehow maybe it was TV, but I said, because they grow stuff from nothing. And this is what I said at 4 years old.
Wow.
And I just had this innate sort of wanting to grow, build, you know, stuff. And my grandmother quickly said, no. Doctor or lawyer? I said, no, farmer. Because, you know, there's no professionals in my family at that point. So.
Well, that's funny you said that about growing something, because what excited Jack and I about interviewing Mark was that he's a different kind of entrepreneur. He doesn't just build something from scratch that is unprecedented. What's so cool about you is that you take something that already existed and then you just do this new different version of it. And that's your style of entrepreneurship, with diapers.com, which you founded.
Funny story, when I moved to New Jersey, moved to this new town, Mount Lakes, had some neighbors, and I was doing diapers at the time, and I met the neighbor, the guy, and he said, you know, what do you do? And I said, I basically sell diapers over the internet. So to this day, he said, right after that, he went back to his wife and said, don't get too close to them. The guy sells diapers
on the internet. So why did you Why did you do that, Mark?
Because we noticed with the diaper business model, diapers you lose money on. It's a lost llama. Like, and selling diapers on the internet, you lose even more money on each diaper.
So what was your thought behind it?
So I think this is funny. Like, as an entrepreneur, you have to have that naivete going into any business. And that's usually the secret weapon. Because anybody in the space I talked to that knew anything about diapers or retail said that's the worst possible idea I could possibly think of. Like, you're going to basically take something that makes no money, and then you're going to basically ship it to somebody's house, pay for shipping, pay to put it in a box, pay all the labor, everything. Like, you're going to lose even more money. So how's that a good idea? That was sort of the thinking generally across the board. I was like sort of naive at the time, and I'm like, yeah, but they're a loss leader for a reason. They drive traffic into Walmart or Target. There's a reason why they don't make money on diapers, because they sell everything else. And I just thought, well, online, you can sell a lot more than what you can sell in a Walmart. And so doesn't that mean you can lose even more money on the diapers? So that was the original aha moment. And it turned out to be that way. And even today, you know, Amazon or whatever, Walmart loses a ton of money on diapers because it is the single best driver of that relationship with new parents.
So you got everyone hooked on the diapers.
Yeah. Hooked on diapers should have been the website. Yeah. The more honest business name.
But then you booked them on other products that you would sell through the website.
Yeah, so eventually everything for baby on diapers.com. But then we opened a pet site and a toy site and a home site and all these sites that were all under one common cart.
Now, Mark's being a little modest here because he's not saying that he actually became the biggest diaper salesman on earth through diapers.com, which attracted the attention of a big e-commerce company,
Amazon. You eventually sold the business to Amazon for $550 million. You were a father by that point, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you sold a company for a tremendous amount of money. Mm-hmm. You made it. You had 3 years to rest and invest. Were those the best years of your life?
Jack and I always say celebrate the wins. Man, selling your company for half $1 billion like that? How'd you celebrate that win?
After the sale, I was sort of depressed.
So you sold the company and you were not depressed.
I was depressed, yeah. The next
day. Did you go and like have a drink after in a pot of champagne?
But a drink, not to celebrate, but in depression.
Can you share more?
You know, as an entrepreneur, you have a vision and you kind of like see what you want to become and you start moving along that trajectory and you get more excited about the idea of actually getting there. And you're sort of driven by the mission more than the money at that point. And Amazon didn't like it. And they cut the price of diapers 30%, came after us, and slowed the business, but not too much. More importantly, investors were like, whoa, I'm not going to give you money. You got this giant here coming after you. And that's when it was very hard to raise like hundreds of millions of dollars. There was no SoftBank and Tiger and these guys that would write these big checks and stuff at the time.
So Mark, what did you do at that moment? Like when Amazon comes after you and tries to destroy you, what do you do?
Then you sell to them.
So Amazon tried to destroy your company by cutting the price of your core product by 30%. They were willing to take any losses necessary to take your customers, but they didn't destroy you.
No, they just slowed it slightly, and I think that's what convinced them. Wait a second, this brand was more than about just price. It really meant something. People had an emotional connection to it.
So the 30% price cut, people were still buying from diapers.com, despite it being available for cheaper on Amazon.
Yes.
And what's going through your head? You know, you sold to them. You're right. You got that financial win. You know, Jack and I always talk about being rich versus being king. You got the rich side, but you lost control. What are those 3 years like after you sell your company?
Yeah, it was 2.5 years. You know, we continued to grow the company inside Amazon, but very quickly the brain started to think about what's next in 2.5 years.
So Mark didn't go away.
No,
like Amazon hoped he would. A few years later, he goes independent again,
mm-hmm.
and he launches another e-commerce company.
This sounds like something.
And
like,
this ain't no Michael Scott paper company.
This is like something out of Game of Thrones. Here's what Mark does. He leaves Amazon, starts an Amazon rival called Jet.com, which he ultimately sells to Amazon's biggest rival, Walmart, for $3.3 billion, the largest e-commerce exit in history at that time.
It was, Look, I would have quit my career after the bobsled invitation, and he was just beginning.
I would have opened a diapers brick and mortar store.
George Costanza, I'm done, everybody.
Oh, Yetis, we still got a whole bunch more to talk to Mark about, don't we, Jack?
But first, a quick commercial break, then we'll go back to the live interview with Mark.
Airbnb.
I just got invited to the first wedding of the summer.
Yeah.
Happens to be a gay wedding.
Nice.
Very excited to attend.
And the first thing that you did, Jack?
Book a hotel for the wedding.
Okay, second thing that you did?
List my place as available that weekend on Airbnb.
Millions of people host on Airbnb, but millions more have never even thought about hosting.
Here's the thing. We've said it's great to make money while you sleep. Actually, Warren Buffett said that.
Well, when you're an Airbnb host, you make money while you sleep and while someone else sleeps.
That's why anytime I'm traveling, I immediately jump into Airbnb and set my house as available. It's that easy.
So Yetis, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Yetis, how good is the feeling of finally getting something off your chest?
You've been wanting to say it. You've been waiting to say it.
But you bottled it up.
In Waspy, Vermont, where I grew up, we didn't talk much about our problems. We were encouraged to keep them to yourself.
Yetis, bottling up your feelings is just horrible for you because eventually it blows up with an outburst. And then while it's stewing, it makes your whole stomach feel terrible.
We encourage you to get it off your chest. And the perfect place to do that is therapy.
You will not believe how good it feels to say something that has been left unsaid, and you can practice with a therapist and then end up telling your loved ones the best way possible later on.
You don't have to tell them, but you could. It's 100% up to you. Oh, and by the way, what you tell your therapist remains completely confidential.
So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/tboy today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/tboy.
So what was the motivating factor behind launching another e-commerce company? Was this your Count of Monte Cristo moment?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't necessarily like to get back at Amazon.
Not necessarily.
I mean, it was a nice to have. but it was really, I felt like just unfinished business in e-commerce, you know? Like,
yeah.
Had access to capital, had great people that knew the space really well, and just came up with an idea in the space knowing it well.
So you did know it well. Yeah. I remember I was living in New York City when Jet.com launched.
Yeah, oh, all over the subway, you'd see the purple ads for Jet.com.
I remember there was just these really smart, like marginal pricing perks. For example, if you pay with a debit card, your bill's less. If you order like a certain product and have it delivered a certain day, you save money. It was really interesting.
That was like your differentiator. Because again, Mark starts companies that already existed, but you do them slightly differently. So like, how do you look at the problem of how do I do better than Amazon?
Yeah, this was just looking, having been inside there, the logistics are a big part of the expense and the margins are low. And Amazon, and this really still do, is very inefficient the way they ship products, and it's very expensive. And so I thought, what if you created a website where you can empower people to shop smarter and share the logistics savings with them? So if you're shopping on Jet.com and you buy your first item and it's located in these four warehouses around the country, all the products in those four warehouses become cheaper because the marginal cost to ship it is now lower because it can go in the same box, rather than buying something that will ship from a different warehouse. So that's an example.
And you share the savings. It's almost like those company travel policies where like if you spend the night on your buddy's couch during a business trip, your company will give you some of the money you would have spent at the hotel. You
know what I mean? That's it. Right? That's exactly right.
The funny thing is that your latest venture, what you're doing right now, isn't e-commerce, it's food. Again, Jack and I like to think of it as DoorDash and Domino's and Eataly had a baby that was raised by Bobby Flay.
I love that. I'm going to use that. Can I use that?
Run with it. Also, congratulations, because Mark, for that company, Wonder, just raised $700 million last month, which is the largest VC fundraise not AI related in the last 3 years.
And the reason Mark was able to raise such money is because he sold to Walmart for $3 billion. Sounds like a lot of money. However, at the end of his tenure, Walmart had doubled the market cap, which is like $200 billion of gains.
Totally.
Not just because of this guy, but definitely because Walmart had become the number two player in e-commerce, largely because of Jet.com.
Because of Mark.
So venture capitalists are like, here you go. Here you go. Here you go.
But then, Mark, that brings us to the question Jack and I are wondering. Out of all the industries to go into next, you've been a technologist, diapers, e-commerce. Why wonder and why food?
That's a great question. So, I mean, I'm inside Walmart e-commerce and watching food delivery explode around the world. It was nothing 13 years ago. We're $100 billion today. People are putting a premium on convenience. People don't want to cook as much. And I just felt like it was the early days of e-commerce where you have marketplaces leading the way. And then eventually along comes Amazon with full vertical integration. And I thought somebody's going to vertically integrate. Somebody's going to take food delivery to a whole other level. That's what we sort of set out to do, was to create a fully vertically integrated food delivery platform where we own all the restaurants on the platform. We own the platform, we own the delivery, and we do all the cooking of what is now 30 different restaurants across every cuisine type in a 2,800 square foot kitchen with only two pieces of electric cooking equipment.
Wow. Two?
That's it. Wow. So no hoods, no gas, no flames, no chefs. It's 30 different restaurants, everything from a high-end steakhouse like Bobby Flay or Jose Andreas down to barbecue, burgers, fried chicken, everything in between, Italian, Mexican, Greek, Middle Eastern, all in one location. And you're able to get it in 30 minutes hot. We won't deliver more than 6 minutes in the city, so you're going to get it hot and fast. And we're able to cook the food, so all the food finishes cooking at the same time. So if you order from multiple restaurants, finish at the same time, one delivery, everybody in the family can eat something different.
We always say Chicago does logistics. I think Mark does logistics.
Mark, how do you cook a steak?
I mean, it's been 5.5 years in the making, but we can cook a steak now, filet mignon, cooked to perfect temperature in 6 minutes, seared on both sides perfectly by just pushing a button.
Wow. How? Yeah. Where is this button?
We can cook a pizza in 88 seconds. We can cook pasta sauteed al dente with no water. We can cook wok, stir fry without a wok. Like some really cool,
seriously, how?
Really cool stuff. Every item has a different technique, but we spent, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars over the last 5 years to invent new ways of cooking so that we can cook, well, all 600 different meals across 30 restaurants in one 2,800 square foot kitchen. So it's like an entire platform's worth of food coming out of the same spot, and we can cook it fast, and we can time it with the courier so that the food never sits and it gets to you hot.
We've covered Wonder before in the pod, so Yetis may remember it. When Jack and I covered it, it was a different business. You started with food trucks in suburban New Jersey, but now you have zero food trucks. You've pivoted the business.
So overnight, he decided to sell all of the Wonder vans he had invested in.
Yeah.
How did you tell your company that?
Yeah, you
had 2,000 employees at that time, I think. And how, you know, that seems like a tremendously risky decision. How did you go about it?
Yeah. So I think as an entrepreneur, one of the things that you have to always do is be super objective, not get too wed to what you said in the past, what you told people, the employees, the press, investors. You have to just look at all the information every day and say, if I were starting over today, what would I do? Because as an entrepreneur, when you're doing a startup, you learn a lot along the way. And, you know, the vision is the same, vertically integrated food delivery. But the original thinking was, rather than cook in a kitchen and then deliver it, why not, you know, have the kitchen move to you and then cook it outside your door? You can't beat that in terms of quality. Mm-hmm. It really forced us to learn how to cook a Bobby Flay steak or Jose Andreas in the back of a Mercedes Sprinter van with only one piece of electric equipment. And you had to do it in under like 6 minutes, and the driver had to cook. So it forced us to innovate in an incredible way that we never would have done had we started in brick and mortar. But what we found was when we tested a brick and mortar, we had 450 trucks on the road, okay? And then it was profitable, it was working, but not a great return on capital because the trucks are expensive. We tested a brick and mortar, and the thought was if we set a really tight delivery radius, could we replicate the quality? As soon as it comes out of the oven, goes right into a hot bag, and to your home in 6-10 minutes max in the suburbs. And we were able to replicate the quality with a much lower cost of capital, higher margins. You were able to unlock multi-restaurant ordering, and you were able to bring this to this urban, suburban, and rural. So I saw it was a much bigger idea. Once we proved mm-hmm. that, we had one open for a month, the store. And I knew that we had to make a move. Like that was the
one physical location open, and you realize we have to get rid of the food trucks.
After a month.
So Mark, wow. you told your team, hey guys, we are going to build food halls in highly concentrated like city areas where there's a lot of people that we could deliver to in a tight radius.
And suburban too.
And that's what we're going to do now. And if someone raised their hand and said, what about the 450 vans we bought? How do you interpret that kind of response?
Yeah. I mean, that it's just like you would imagine. It was not, you know, people were shocked.
And you just said, no, that's a sunk cost, or how did you explain it?
I think sunk cost, sunk in the sense that we also learned how to invent new ways of cooking that we never would have been able to do if we started. If we started in brick and mortar, it would have been a massive kitchen. Like, you couldn't cook 30 restaurants with traditional cooking equipment and means. So we were like years of iterating with the trucks because you had like a very small amount of square feet. The driver had to cook. You only had one oven. You had to do it really fast. And so we kept pushing ourselves to make the economics work. I knew we had something incredible in the brick and mortar, and that was a much bigger idea. Once, as an entrepreneur, again, with all information available at that time, I knew that was a really, really big idea. And so everything else doesn't matter, because if you continue down that path, then you could be missing out on this incredible opportunity. And so I think what I've learned is that people, especially entrepreneurs, but I think people in life in general, underestimate the risk of the status quo and they overestimate the risk of change.
I'd love to repeat that. People underestimate the risk of continuing the status quo.
Of just like, you feel comfortable, like, hey, this is working. You know, we were unprofitable with the trucks. We got profitable. Everybody's like, yeah, you know, we did it. We're there. Like, and it's hard to see the risk at that point. And then you think change, wow, like it's new. There's all these unknowns and it feels really risky. But I think people overestimate that risk, because you got to sometimes just take a step back and say, like, forget about what we've done, where we are, just clean slate. You're an entrepreneur. You're starting today. You know everything that you've learned over the last 5 years. What would you do? And I asked myself that question. I said, hands down, not even like a shot in hell, I'd do the trucks over the brick and mortar. I would do the brick and mortar right now. As soon as I said that to myself with conviction, the next day I came in and told everybody, guys, we're cutting down the trucks. We're selling them. We're going in this direction. Trucks are done. We tell the investors. We have a board meeting. Tell the press. Tell the employees. It's done. There's no like, we're going to like run down two paths, because you don't have enough runway to do that. You can't, you know, you can't have people like in two different places.
Well, speaking of risk, what you're describing is the business you're in, which is moonshots. And how would we describe moonshot entrepreneurs, Jack?
A moonshot is a very low probability project, like a venture that probably is going to fail, but if it succeeds, could change the world. That's what a moonshot is.
I love it. That's a great definition.
And you've said that you're pursuing moonshots, which means, in your words, there's a higher chance it may not work out. So we were curious, you know, if Wonder didn't work out, what do you think the reason why would be?
Well, first of all, the business starts out as a moonshot. And then with time, sort of the probability of success rises. And I'm feeling pretty good right now.
Nice. Well, we actually, Jack and I went to Wonder last night.
We went Monday night. Yeah. And
we went to town.
We didn't get like a special VIP treatment.
No.
We went to 23rd Street between 6th and 7th Avenue. Yeah. And we walked in, we saw like 20 different menus of food.
We got great spanakopita. We got the DeFaris pizza.
We got tacos. We got a brisket sandwich. We had some leftovers.
Yeah, we did. So we're going to have that later tonight.
We expensed the whole meal.
Before we let you go, Mark, Jack and I wanted to talk to you about a few philosophies we've kind of picked up on. And full disclosure, Yetis, Jack and I spoke with Mark a couple weeks ago to prepare for this show. And when we were talking with you, we noticed a few things. We noticed that you have a real focus on fairness, in that everyone in one of Mark's companies knows what everyone else is making. There's salary transparency across the board. So we got curious about that.
I mean, that's super admirable. What are the costs and benefits that you consider of salary transparency and just fairness overall?
I think for the most part, everyone knows what everyone's making, but also the comp bands, everybody at the director level makes the same amount of money, the same stock, and VP, everybody makes the same. So, you know, I have two daughters, you know, 24 and 21, and I'm definitely very sensitive to like this idea that, you know, some people get paid more just because they're a squeaky wheel and they kind of push for it, and other people don't and they get taken advantage of. Like, I wanted to create a really fair system. And I think you get a lot of credit for that, you know, in terms of the kind of culture you want to build. It builds trust and it builds loyalty and people really respect it. So I think there's a lot of positives that come out of it. I think it also forces the organization to do the right thing because it is transparent. You can't hide from it. Like, you have to make sure, like, is this fair? Is this right? But I think the only downside is it definitely costs the company money because if you like bring somebody in from the outside at a director level and you're convinced they're a director, but in order to get them, you got to pay a little bit more, then all the directors in the company need to get paid more. Wow. Like that kind of thing. Like, wow. You really want to be pure about it. But that's only if you bring in that director because you thought that maybe the director level really is underleveled and everyone should be higher. So use market comp to like adjust the comp for everyone.
It's clear that it's been an HR advantage because you've hired so fast.
Yeah.
I heard an interview with you a couple of years ago. You had 2,000 employees, I think. What are you at today for Wonder?
For Wonder? Well, that's including hourly. I mean, not hourly. It's like 300 people in corporate. Okay. But then a lot of hourly.
Okay. Yeah. Delivering. Yeah, and we should clarify that
location. And kitchen and in the kitchen.
Yeah, that location at 23rd Street between 6th and 7th we went to Monday night. We dined in.
Yeah.
But the bread and butter seemed to be delivery and takeout. Yeah.
There was...
Just to clarify for our audience.
Yeah, it's 50% pickup, 50% delivery. You know, it's not really much sit down, but you know, you can. That's really counted as pickup. But we're launching 80 locations in the tri-state area in the next 18 months. So they're gonna start showing up.
We're gonna start to see this everywhere.
That's $700 million to work. There was one other thing we noticed from the call with Mark. Remember, it was a great line.
Yes, Mark, you mentioned, you hear people say, "Don't put the cart before the horse." You actually said, "You do put the cart before the horse."
We were on the call with Mark. I'm like, "Wait, did we hear that right? Why do you put the cart before the horse?"
Can you tell us that philosophy you have?
Yeah, no. As an entrepreneur, like a lot of times you have an idea, you don't want to like go through all the research and things. Sometimes you just want to like get going immediately to just see if it's going to work with the least amount of effort as possible, least amount of money as possible. Like when I started the financial risk management certification exam.
Yeah.
That's one of the companies we skipped over in his early ages.
I was like, early 20s and wanted to be certified as a financial risk manager, but there wasn't an exam. So I thought I'd start it. And people thought that was really funny because, how could you start a certification exam? So I said, good point. So I started an association of risk professionals that would then do the exam. So that was a little better. But anyway, I didn't want to waste a lot of time. So I put the cart in front of the horse. I basically, on the website, basically said, here are the books to read for the exam. Here are the topics. And it's going to be in New York City in May. This is the price to sit for the exam. Send the check here if you want to take it. And just started getting checks. So the cart was definitely ahead of the horse there.
So, some people might hear that and think, did you do it? Did you write those exams?
Yeah, wrote the exam. It was me and a colleague. We wrote the exam. We administered in New York City. We administered personally. We corrected them. Then after we were correcting, we're like, wait a second. Who are we passing? Who are we failing? So we said, why don't we just do 50-50? So the top 50 passed. Sent out certificates. The bottom 50, we failed. That was the first year. Now it's given in like, I don't know, 80 countries around the world today. Like
it's a huge organization. This exam people exists. Apply for Wonder, and they've got that on the resume.
This exam is still being given. I still hear it on the radio sometimes. It's pretty funny. Like, you can just start anything.
Well, on that note, Mark, thank you so much for being here with us. Jack and I... Jack and I end every story by asking, what's the takeaway?
So, Mark, we want to let you tell the audience, what's the takeaway for Mark Lori and for Wonder?
Just the takeaway, like a high level.
Yeah, your insight, the final thing you want to leave everyone with.
I would say give more than you take. I think that's really important. Good things come back to you. Good things will come back to you.
Mark, thank you so much for being with us. Yetis, you looked fantastic for today's surprise bonus interview show. And Jack, you were looking amazing on stage.
Thanks, man.
Flowing. Just amazing.
You too, dude. We wish we could have had all the Eddies and Besties in the studio audience with us, but this is the next best thing.
In fact, there's actually a whole bunch that we do at our live shows that we just can't fit into one podcast.
So we hope when T-Boy comes to your city, you'll be able to be there in real life.
In the meantime, if you like today's interview with Mark, the serial entrepreneur, check out his new company, Wonder.
And if you really liked it, share this episode with a buddy.
Oh, and then don't forget to click and follow us so that you get a new T-Boy pod every single day.
We're back to our regular daily show on Monday.
In the meantime, celebrate the wins.
If you like The Best One Yet, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
And before you go, tell us a little bit about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
We want to get to know you.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.